Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
As a family in New Hampshire mourns the death of one journalist recently killed by captors in Syria, a family in Cambridge is making plans for the homecoming of another journalist held captive there. The families of James Foley, who was beheaded last week, and of Peter Theo Curtis, who was set free on Sunday, have kept in close contact as they worked for the releases of their loved ones. Nancy Curtis tells ABC News the first thing she did after learning of her son's release was to get in touch with the Foleys.
Before I even told my daughter, I sat down and I sent an email to Diane Foley. We've been through so much together. And I didn't want her to hear it from the media first.
The plight of Theo Curtis and James Foley has brought heightened attention of the risks taken by many American journalists overseas. WBUR's David Boeri reports on the growing number of those journalists who essentially work for themselves and who are responsible for their own protection.
This is Trafalgar Square. The noise that you hear at the moment is the sound of the air raid siren.
CBS correspondent Edward R. Murrow reporting the London Blitz in August 1940, one of the most famous moments in broadcasting history. In contrast to the personal danger and risk, as a reporter, Murrow had the backing of a network when networks and newspaper companies reigned. By the turn of the century, their empires would be fading.
When I began as a foreign correspondent in El Salvador in the early 1980s.
Journalist Chris Hedges.
I was working for the Dallas Morning News, the Baltimore Sun, the Philadelphia Inquirer. All of the networks had established bureaus that covered the war. That's all gone.
Covering wars, which came to dominate foreign reporting, skewed to the visual. Yet even with the increasing turn to war coverage, generations of TV reporters inspired by Murrow lost their jobs and assignments to the bottom line. In a world of outsourcing, freelance reporters and photographers have become our war correspondents. And it's a buyer's market.
People will try to just take your imagery and, you know, buy it for nothing. People will try to, you know, put you on assignment for very little.
Photographer Max Betcherer, talking to me from Pakistan, has been covering war zones for the last 10 years. He's a freelancer with an agency, Polaris Images, to represent him. Yet, even the agencies are being destroyed by developments like Instagrams that can be sent up into the public domain from the battlefield for the taking.
The regular news organizations don't really have the money to cover it like they did, and freelancers can fill the gap, but it's a lot of risk taken on by the freelancers.
Betcherer says he and his agency will sometimes share the expenses, but he has to carry his own insurance. He can't get ransom insurance.
So I can barely find adequate hazardous, like emergency evacuation insurance.
Contrast that with Chris Hedges, covered by Lloyd's of London when he was covering wars for the New York Times. In Bosnia, he had a $100,000 armored car when freelancers rode in cars made of sheet metal. And after the Iraqis released him from captivity during the first Gulf War, he had to write thank you notes to General Norman Schwarzkopf, the Pope, and Gorbachev, who the Times had all recruited on his behalf.
You have, when you work for an organization like that, mechanisms to put pressure on your captors that, you know, Foley just didn't have.
Hedges is referring to James Foley, a freelancer who contributed to the online news company Global Post. Charles Sennett is his co-founder. Sennett calls the news world in which Chris Hedges operated the Ancien Regime. The new world he embraces is this network of freelancers.
We have insurance in place. We have kidnap and ransom insurance. If we coordinate with them and we come up with a good game plan where we can be sure they are covered.
Sennett says Foley had followed that model as a Global Post correspondent in Afghanistan. But here seems an illustration of the risks of freelancing. In essence, Foley became too much of a freelancer, says Sennett.
In Syria, Jim really went on his own. He didn't go as an assignment from Global Post. He went to freelance for a lot of different news organizations, and he said, I'm going, and then I'll call you. And that is the more perilous situation.
Senate says Global Post assumed full responsibility nonetheless. In Pakistan, Max Beecherer reflects on both financial and physical survival. Because of competition from so many freelancers, day rates for Iraq, where he makes $250 a day, are the same they were in the 1990s, he says. He realized Libya was a buyer's market when magazine picture editors told him, "We'd love to see your stuff when you get back," which was after he assumed all the risks. As for survival tips, Beecherer says he tries to stay away from newcomers, no matter how well-intentioned they are. The job is hard enough already.
I think you have to personally decide that I'm going to this place, it's very dangerous, and I'm choosing to go there. So I need to accept that I will or can die doing this. Because once you make that decision, you can say, okay, I'm probably going to die, but then what can I do to mitigate that? Then you go backwards.
Chris Hedges drew the attraction of war darkly when he wrote the book, War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. And safety in wartime is a very relative term.
Here we go again, another plane's come over.
When CBS correspondent George Hicks reported on the D-Day landing, he had a Navy and a network behind him. In the new order, it seems, the correspondents are in rowboats. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm David Boeri.